Good afternoon and welcome. This is the March 4th, 2024 work session of the Salisbury City Council. In the event of an emergency, we ask that everyone remain calm and exit through the double doors to the parking lot located in the front corner of this building. If the doors are blocked, please exit through the door to my right by pulling the fire alarm located to the right of the door under the monitor. Please let us know if you need any assistance. At this time, we ask that everyone please silence your cell phones. Public comments will be heard after each agenda item. If you plan to speak, please fill out a form on the table near the door you came in and give it to the city clerk. Upon adjournment of this work session, three closed sessions will be held with an open session in between each in order to provide our report to the public. Before we get started, I'd like, on behalf of council in the city, to wish Councilwoman Jackson a happy birthday on Wednesday. So can we all just wish Councilwoman Jackson a happy birthday?
Thank you all, everyone.
We'll spare you. We won't sing. So that's not not my talent, at least. And our first item on the agenda is the J.D. Oliver Annexation, presented by City Administrator Andy Kittrow and City Planner Amanda Rodriguez.
All right. Thank you, guys. I am the support act in this one. So if you guys have not been able to really meet Amanda in this capacity, she is our newly appointed city planner. So we're excited that she's in this new position. I'm going to let her take the lead and provide support. But this is for the J.D. Oliver annexation. You have the details of the annexation in your packet. It is pretty straightforward. But if there's any specific questions that you'd like to go over about the project or just the annexation process, Amanda's here to help guide us through those conversations.
Yep, so just a quick overview to refresh your memory. This is about a year old. It came before you for initial review. In the meantime, it's been sent to Planning Commission where they recommended the zoning to be general commercial. So we've adopted that, and this is just back for your re-review before it goes to public hearing. The site's approximately 13 and a half acres. It's already improved. It's an industrial and commercial trucking facility, and they also do wholesale part sales, repair and service. So they intend to continue that, just new owners.
Okay. Thank you. Council, are there any questions? No? Are there any public comments? Okay. Do we have consensus to move this forward to the legislative agenda?
Yes.
Do we have consensus to move this forward to the legislative agenda?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up is the rear loader trash truck purchase discussion presented by Mayor Randy Taylor, Andy Kittrow, and Field Operations Director Mike Dryden.
Mike is becoming a familiar face around here, as you guys can tell, from sanitation. I'll let the mayor and Mike kind of take the lead on this, but you know what it's about based off the packet, but any particular questions. But we've been, I think, afforded a unique opportunity. But Mayor, I'll let you, or Mike, take it.
Yeah. A couple years ago, we, of course, ordered three new machines, of which all were still on order as of the last quarter. And we realized they're something 6 months behind, I think 6 or 8 months behind in terms of delivery. So when I became mayor, I decided, you know, we got talking about it. I said, you know what, why don't we just try and go find a finished product that we can buy and transport. So we're going to take, of the three existing commitments, which we've already made, I guess, in prior years, the first one, which was the rear loader, we're going to go ahead and substitute the one that they're talking about tonight, which is in the package. And I think there's a differential of about $35,000. However, we're buying a two-year younger machine with, I guess, the appropriate upgrades for that. And so that will give us the machine that's in Florida. They can
that's
get it
correct.
Here in a week.
Yeah.
So we're going to – we have to finance the or fund the difference of about $35,000, but the other money is already earmarked. And then we're just going to go ahead and wait for the two side loader machines, which I think are going to come in February, March, April.
March and late May now.
Yeah. So by early spring, we should have three machines brand new, and then we're going to fund the last fourth machine out of the ones we've got, kind of part it together and kind of do it to next year or so. So. But we had a little bit of a scare because we had a machine we thought was going to create some more mechanical issues. So we said, let's just get it in the inventory and let's get on with it. So,
questions from council?
I just want to ask, now this rear loader, is this one that you wanted a rear loader or did you want a side loader?
No, we do want a rear loader, yes.
Okay.
$35,000.
Mm-hmm. So just as a reminder, it's kind of as our daily operations in our fleet, having two rear loaders and two side loaders gets us operational on a routine basis, so we're not having to borrow, beg, or steal from other people to make that work. And with our schedule that we've presented here, that will give us three of four new, and we may look at getting a fourth one. So then we'll be set and won't have to face any issues that we faced recently.
I kind of missed something. I'm going to be honest. Is it $35,000 more or less?
More. Yes.
But again, it's a two-year younger machine, so both of them would be brand new. But it would be a 22 that we had ordered, and we'll get a 22. I don't know how it works. I don't know how you deliver a 22 2 years later, but that's how it works.
This will put our sanitation fleet right where we need to have it.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I'm like, Mayor, we ordered a 22. We're getting a 22, but there was a two-year span and not getting it.
Yeah, I guess it's a normal wait time is about 18 months, but it's taken more than 2 years now. So we decided to abandon that contract, unwind the capital lease, and then deploy it into this new one where we can just get it into inventory.
And how soon will we be getting it?
The one that we're talking about right now, once we go through procurement and everything, we can have it here with freight and everything. It's in Florida, so once we do, go through the process, a matter of weeks.
Yep. Did you want to drive it back up?
Yeah, I'll drive it back up.
Sounds like a road trip. I'm down.
What is the plan for the current the vehicle that we're replacing?
We're going to keep what we have and just kind of piece what we're using right now and continue to use the equipment that we're currently using. And then as we get the new stuff, just put the new stuff in the fleet and just continue with the older. Is that what you're asking? Just rehab what we're using?
So the vehicle that we're replacing, we're going to still keep that?
We're going to still keep it and use it. So we're going to have four new, and then we'll have four in the back so that we can continue to use that. So we'll have our A squad and our B squad.
Okay.
That's kind of how I'm going to be using that. What's that?
But to my knowledge, that vehicle is falling apart.
Our current fleet?
The vehicle, yes.
Yes, it is falling apart.
It's falling apart.
Yes, so we
it's
went.
It's falling. It's falling, right?
It's done. We just had it's done. Okay. We are using 2.5 trucks right now.
Gotcha.
So the reason why we're doing this is so that we are not in a situation we were in December and January. I do not want to fall back to that, so that's why we're moving quick on this.
Okay.
You're fine.
So, but we should still keep that vehicle
We should still keep that vehicle.
Can you give me a little bit
I can take parts from that and put on other vehicles.
Okay.
So we do it with our fire department. We have frontline and backline vehicles. So if something needs a service repair, an oil change, it gets in an accident, we're not losing operational continuity. We can take something that's kind of in a reserve stock to bring to the forefront, but right now we're using a reserve stock as the primary, which that wear and tear we're constantly having to do repairs, and we're behind the eight ball right now. So anything that's completely bad, we will probably surplus for parts.
Yeah, I have stuff in the yard that we pull from all the time just to replace pieces.
Okay. Are there any more questions from council?
No.
Any public comments? No? Okay. Do we have consensus to move this forward to the legislative agenda?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do we have consensus?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
All right, next we will discuss the apology resolution. Looks like we have Ms. LaCole and Ms. Turner, good afternoon.
Yes, I think on your agenda was Amber Green, our chair of the Truth Committee, but she was not able to be here this evening, so I'm Jesse Turner, staff liaison for that committee. And you all have the memo and the proposed resolution in your packet. But just to summarize, at a meeting a couple weeks ago, the Truth Committee reviewed and discussed the apology resolution, the most recent draft we received from the mayor. They voted on that 4-0 to move that on to work session, requested that it be here tonight. And so here we are to...
Can you say the Truth Committee?
Truth Committee.
Oh, 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
On February 21st. And so we're just here this evening to present that to you. I want to introduce Kanisha LaCole. She is our newly elected vice chair of the Truth Committee. New to her role, new to the committee, actually, but very capable. And so if there's any questions, we will take those and then just ask that this be moved forward to a legislative session.
Thank you. Any questions from council?
I have a question. How many actual members, voting members, are on the Truth Committee?
Six.
Four, there's six total. So how many vacancies you have? Several, maybe?
Seven.
Seven. Wow. Okay. Okay. All right. So all four that were there were solid together?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions from council?
I'm sitting here just... You know how I feel, so. I thought the way it was presented before, without some other litigation from our city attorney, was fine. And I think that right now, I'm not pleased with this. I'm going to say I'm still not pleased.
Any other questions?
So, Mayor, have you gotten back to the Truth Committee and talked to them about this, about your presentation of it, and when that may happen? And
well, they voted on it, and so that was the kind of the design, I think, originally, is that they were going to generate it, and then we helped put that together, and they approved it. So.
As an advisory committee to the mayor, once they vote on it, the next step is for me as the staff liaison to create a memo on behalf of the committee for them to present it. And then speaking on behalf of him, he gave his okay to that memo that you have in your packet.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do we have public comment?
Nothing online.
Okay. Okay. Do we have consensus to move this forward?
Yes.
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 No.
With my yes, we have consensus to move this forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Next up is our discussion on the downtown parking options. I brought this up after seeing a few people online and just, you know, given our recent garage situation, just for us to communicate, and hopefully we can hear from admin just about what's going on with the parking, just to kind of get an update, just to field some questions.
Sure. Just kind of an overview, since we do have a couple of new council people. In our fee schedule that was adopted last year, there are different rate structures that exist. So we have general permit fees. So if someone was interested in renting or getting a permit in a different lot, there's a fee associated with that. If you are a nonprofit who is going to cover the cost of those parking permits, there's a nonprofit fee reduction that is 25% less than the current rate of that permit. And then we also have a bulk rate for student housing. So the Ross is the only entity that's taking advantage of that right now. It is set up that bulk means 30 or more permits, and then you would receive a rate of what is currently $35. So it's not a prorated amount based off of the rates. It is just a set rate at $35, which in the current rate, all the permits are issued in the parking garage. The parking garage rate is $70, so it's about 50% of that price right now. So those are the three fees that exist. And when we do our budget discussions, if we want to add or modify, we can do that through budget amendment to change the fee schedule. We'll discuss that during our budget deliberations. I see that you're talking about a student or senior discount, so if that is, or other, that would be something that if you're looking at doing a discount, you would consider that within the fee structure, and if there's any stipulations that you would want to place around that, that's how you would do it. We don't currently have any additional discounts or rate reductions when it comes to transient parking, which is like the pay stations and the meters, other than some of the free hours. So at the meters, it's one free hour. In the parking garage, it's two free hours. That's the first hour. And then if there's any other parking holidays that we do, those can be put into place, or after certain hours in the evening, we don't enforce parking. So I think that brings me up to speed. Any questions about just parking setup in general? All right.
Do we have any questions from council? No. Okay. Thank you. And I think we'll just keep it a fluid conversation where people feel. But the only question I have is what's the update on the actual garage and that with the new implementation versus what's going on now?
It is. Is Mike might have. We are still in the active transition of moving to an automated parking garage, which you have seen or experienced, which will be attendantless is the plan. We've had a couple hiccups as we're going through getting some of the new software and some of the infrastructure put into place, but that is our plan, is to move to an automated system that will track and essentially follow the same hours that it's followed in the past and the same fee structure.
Perfect. Thank you. And along the same line, I know I put it here to remind myself, we've had a couple constituents ask about Unity Square. I know I've seen a lot of moving parts and pieces in the last couple of weeks. So can we just give a very brief overview of Unity Square and what's to come with that?
Yeah, within Unity Square, the revised timeline that we got at the end of last week was April 10th, hopefully, is a deliverable timeline for it to be fully open. Over the next couple of weeks, you'll start seeing some of the topside finishes happening. With the weather changing, you'll start seeing some of the greenery put into place. But barring no major setbacks, we should be open. We do have an event, Hops on the River, that's coming up that second weekend in April. So hopefully stars align and everything works out that we incorporate that.
Gotcha.
But then also hopefully it will be incorporated into the third Friday footprint. But we're really excited about seeing that come online.
Good, good. Well, yeah, I saw some more foot traffic at the construction, so I thought to ask, and people, different persons have asked about that. So any public comments relating to Unity Square? You want to just state your name and your address for the record when you get up there. Thank you so much.
I'm Mary Huebner. I wanted to say something about parking first. I went up to Cambridge not too long ago, and I was meeting a friend for lunch, and I pulled into a side street, found a parking lot, and parked. I mean, it was great. Here, now we have the garage. I'm a senior. I'm not speaking for seniors, but in general, we don't really like parking garages. We don't feel safe in them. I don't really want to come down after dark and park in the garage. I'm just not happy with that. I'm a retired librarian, and when you take parking away from a library, it pretty much kills the library. Libraries are a cornerstone of our society, and to take parking away from the library for a park, which I'm confused because we have a lovely park less than a mile from here. It's a great, well, maybe it's a mile. I mean, it's a perfectly good park. And I've been volunteering at the library for a number of years now and park where I can, sometimes in the garage, and I come right out facing Unity Park to be. And I've been watching it for over a year. I don't know how long it's been now, but it seems, I would like to know, it seems like an awfully long time. And about 4 months ago, I thought, oh, good, they're almost finished. And then there are more piles of dirt. So I've got some questions about Unity Park. How much is it costing the city? Is it costing us a lot? Is it overrun? I don't know. I've not seen it in the paper, so I don't know if it's, if there are overruns because it's gone on so long. I suspect it has. I wish there were just parking lots. I just love the parking lot next to the library. It was perfect. And like I said, taking a parking lot away from a library is really the death knell of a library, and it's what we need in this city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Taylor.
Got your bag of tricks, huh?
Just picking up on what the last speaker said, yes, the Unity Park is costing us a lot, not just in money, but it screws up totally the parking situation downtown, and we'll probably get into this more tonight with regard to the Salisbury Town Center apartment mess. But that's not what I came to speak on. I was in court today on the Salisbury Town Center mess, incidentally, and went into the parking garage for the first time with this new system. And just a couple of questions. I'm, you know, not the smartest tack in the room. I'm a lawyer. But I couldn't figure out, if you don't have a credit card, can you get out of there paying cash? It didn't seem to me that you could, number one. And second, for tonight, for example, if we leave after 6, do we have to pay to get out? And what I'm driving at is, will we now have to pay to come to city council meetings in the night? I mean, that seems absurd. You don't have to answer my questions now, but I think they're pertinent questions. And, I mean, I've never seen a system where you had meter things like this where you couldn't pay by cash. But anyway, I haven't seen everything, that's for sure.
Thank you. All right, seeing no other public comments, we will now receive an update on Salisbury Town Center. I'll ask Special Counsel Rena Patel and administration to join us.
How about you? As a general statement, I think everybody's pretty much aware that the proposal for 111 and 15 was denied back in, I guess, November 23. And was rescheduled. They scheduled an appeal, which actually was coincidentally today. And I guess I'll let Rena pick it up from here, but essentially I guess that there was a motion to dismiss the appeal, which was granted. So the status of the case is it's denied, and it would be subject to another appeal, theoretically, in appellate court. So that's kind of the update relative to the project status, but Rena would have a better, probably, legal analysis of that situation. So.
Certainly, I can kind of fill in the.
Can you just move the mic? Thank you.
Yep, I can fill in as to what happened in court and kind of the legal position coming into the court hearing. If everyone recalls, the project was up to the Board of Appeals to increase the density to move the project forward as stated in the LDA. That the Board of Appeals denied the increase in density. Both developer and a group of interested persons filed separate appeals from that board's decision. Developer's appeal is to either reverse or remand the decision. By remand, I mean to send it back to the Board of Appeals for additional findings of fact. The interested persons appealed on a different issue, which is whether or not the Board of Appeals has the right to decide a density issue under the special exemption at all. The Board of Appeals did not in their decision rule on whether or not there's we can do it by special exemption or variance, but nonetheless, those issues were raised in motions to dismiss and responses thereto. That motion to dismiss was being heard today at the circuit court before Judge Jackson. After hearing arguments from both sides, Judge Jackson dismissed the developer's appeal, essentially finding that our city code is preempted by state legislation. Now, a written order hasn't been issued yet. We'll have to see how that order is actually written. There are other projects, including one that was approved that very day, that where a special exemption was granted under these circumstances. So that is the update. So as of right now, the density is denied. However, there are additional levels of appeal that either party could file.
Okay. Council, any questions?
I do have a question, if I may ask. At what point does the modification you were talking about, the appeals and this kind of thing, I'm going back to make sure that in the future we don't have all of this, you know, all this concerns and questions about something that has taken place. At what point do the modifications of the contract, you know, that's constituted the original RFP, which was back in 2015, and then there was an amended and restated LDA in this past year. When would you have to come up with an original RFD that would state all the new changes and everything that has been made that would be sent back for approval?
Let me make sure that I'm understanding your question, Councilwoman. If I'm understanding it correctly, it's at what point, in light of the denial of the density, which would not allow us to build the project as stated in the LDA, at what point does that come back for a rediscussion as to what the project is? I think at this particular point, and I'll recap the land at this particular point, there's still appeals pending. And so there's a lot that's up in the air with respect to that issue and whether or not there would be a rediscussion about what the project is and what it's going to be. I'd bear in mind also that any project that gets built is going to have to go through the normal processes of site plan approval, permit approval,
right.
All
steps
of those things.
Required.
Correct.
Right.
We expect the appeals process to continue,
when does it end?
When does it end?
It's hard to say. We're at the mercy of courts and court schedules. I would anticipate the next level of appeals would usually takes maybe about 14 months.
And even with a favorable result, it's conceivable that this other interested party could appeal that decision, which could take longer. Am I wrong?
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilwoman Jackson, did you
go ahead?
Okay.
Go ahead.
You sure?
Okay. I'm fine.
A couple things. So, I understand that there was a project today that's separate than the project we're even talking about, that was approved for increased density with a special exception. Is that correct? Is that what I heard you say earlier today?
I think Rena said there's a project on the same day of the Board of Appeals decision that was approved.
Correct.
And this one was denied.
Okay, so there was two projects that went in front of the Board of Appeals, and one was approved for increased density. Or what was that special exception?
It was presented by another council, so I don't recall the specifics of that project, but the special exemption process has been used this statute has been on our books for decades, and it has been used several times to approve these types of density variations. For example, I know the Ross went through the same process to get its approval for its density variation. And my memory serves me right, there was another project on the same day that went right before the Salisbury Town Center project in which a density increase was granted through this.
If you name any apartment complex in Salisbury, all of them have been approved with, or most of them have been approved with special exception. I don't want to name
correct, correct, because the density.
I don't want to use the Ross as an example because it's not favorable to some, but a lot of the apartment complexes we know in the city have been approved with special exemption.
Correct, and to that point, the special exemption statute, the code, the zoning code, has been it's very wide reaching. It's not limited to just this, right? The projects that are ongoing or current or within the last year or 2 years or 5 years even. This code has been on the books for decades,
for a long time.
Correct.
Is there a discussion to be had about revisiting the code and fixing it? So because if everybody has to get a special exemption, then are they really exemptions?
Bingo.
Is that the direction that we're going to have to go in order to get housing built in the city?
I think that's
and
the...
What dilemma are we in? Do we see before us now?
I think that's a good conversation because it sounds like this ruling is, it's going to the state level, but what's going to happen with previous projects and then future projects, but, it looks like this is a good time or a good place for us in our current code to look at the zoning and the code.
Even with the projects that we see thus far, what dilemmas do we see coming before the city with this denial of access?
I think that where the challenge is that the local zoning code, and again, I'm not a lawyer, Rena, but the local zoning code gets its authority from the enabling legislation. And the enabling legislation provides for both a variance as well as a special exception. The variance deals specifically with density, which is the subject here. The difference is that our code at some point, 10, 12 years ago, deviated and put variance exceptions under a special exception. And a variance, which is, again, authorized by the enabling legislation, has very specific hardship, one of which is a hardship. So it's really hard to get a density exception because, with a rogue, zoning board, you could have, 1,000 units per acre. So the zoning code at the state level, and I'm sure you can affirm this, you're looking at me like you're not affirming this. That they're giving the enabling legislation. So the reality is we don't have our own ship to sail here. We've got to dovetail with the state level.
But why have we just realized this issue with this project today, with this issue, and why are we so consumed with this? I'm just wondering. It's like now we've allowed this to go on this one project, and now there are several issues. So it seems like we ought to fix it. And why let this stunt this one project that has been approved? The LDA states that this project shall continue. The city has obligations per the LDA. It doesn't state anywhere in the LDA that pending Board of Appeals approval, does it?
No, but the project still has to run its normal course through.
Sure, but if we are to assume that, if council is to assume that when we get a project here, we should say, yes, we approve this project pending A through Z, but if A through Z doesn't work in its processes, then I see no reason for us to approve or disprove projects.
Well, I think there's more than a project can be stunted at several places in its linear time, right? You could run into water sewer problems. You can hit a pipe. You could hit some kind of environmental hazard along the way. There's a lot of different places. So in approving the LDA, the council's not. They're proving that a project moved forward to the next steps of what needs to be done to construct that particular project, including whether or not the city needs to expend funds. For example, in this, there's a parking garage component to the LDA. So there's different reasons to be approving or disapproving the LDA. It's not 100%. There's no 100% guarantee once a project's approved that it's not going to run into snags along the way.
So two questions for you, because I don't want to. So if council is, you know, brings apart zoning and changing the city's code, one, that should move the project forward. Two, that's pretty much my only, you know, is this in one that, and then it seems like, because I read the LDA in its entirety, it seems like the next step is to have a conversation on the bond ordinances, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if council initiates the conversation on the bond ordinances, and then if council is looking to change the zoning in the code, this project should continue forward.
Correct. Those two things. And I think the point that council, I think, is getting at is if we are using, if we, it's a matter of what the city wants for its development, right? And if that has changed since that first density requirement was put in, and I'd opine, I wasn't around when that happened, but if they were creating, if the intent was to create a mechanism, an easier mechanism for which density could be increased based on the project, based on the location, based on, there's a slew of factors that you impact on neighbors and otherwise, that may have been the original intent. And if we're now, and the question was, why are we now facing this when the statute's been on the books for decades? It's sure. Because there was a legal challenge to it, and now we're forced to look more closely at what the statute, what we are and aren't allowed to do. To go back to the intent, if the intent was to allow a mechanism whereby density could be increased, because we say, okay, in this part of Salisbury, we want to be able to have apartment complexes. And again, I want to set aside those projects where people have particular feelings. This special exemption, if we went back and took a look in a study, might impact a very broad range of projects that are not controversial or subject to you know, disagreement at all. And so I think it is a worthwhile exercise to look at what the impact, how often that special exemption has been used, and are we really, is a special exemption the exception or is it our rule? And if it is our rule, then it would follow legally that right. That yeah. that make that sense.
Okay.
I believe the same group of individuals that approved the Ross's density for that project denied this density for this project. Was it the same board members? Do we know? Does anyone?
Because we restructured, and I wasn't.
It's a different makeup. Some similar, some not. I don't have the exact vote on who
so
voted,
it's
but it is a mixture. And we did restructure. There was three boards, and now we have a Board of Appeals. So we combined the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Board of the Housing Board of Appeals, and
Building Board,
into one Board of Appeals. So in theory, the same board, but not the same individual people.
Okay.
Seeing no other questions from council? We do have a couple of public comments. Lisa Gingrich.
Lisa Gingrich, 316 North Division Street. Seems to me that possibly the whole system might need to be looked at again, especially in regards to transparency. I sent an email earlier today to the City Council and questioning the transparency. Why aren't they releasing the minutes from a meeting where this really got going? From June of 2023, it was a meeting including the developer and a closed meeting, which the State Board of Open Meetings issued an opinion that said that wasn't right. So, you know, again, this has been problematic from the beginning. A lot of it is public input. When you talk about why don't we just rubber stamp from A to Z, there's other processes are built in for a reason, checks and balances. so that City Council doesn't get to sit here and say, we want X project. And the attorney for the group in the appeals meeting made it quite clear that he thought that because it had been approved by 5 duly elected officials, as he kept hammering, that it should have been allowed to go through unscathed, unchecked. And that's just wrong, because you 5 don't get to sit here and tell everybody else in the city. You might represent the city districts, but you don't represent every single person in the city. There are going to be differing opinions. Just because you might have a favorite developer that you want to have do this, that, or the other thing, it doesn't mean that we don't also matter. And historic, it went through historic because somebody said, well, if we don't approve this, then you're going to have a lot of money wasted. It bore no resemblance to anything in the historic district. It's like, let's look at the entire process of how this is done. You know, for everything from selling lots for less money than what they've been appraised at, all the way up to density, and everybody be honest. Okay, I have an interest in having higher density downtown, and this is why. Instead of saying, well, we're just going to change the rules to suit ourselves. And believe that you said, Attorney Patel, about, you know, a rogue board could then just do whatever they wanted to do. Again, it's like, let's make sure everybody matters in this, not just 5 people sitting here. And it just adds to the perception that the people of Salisbury don't matter to the people who are supposed to represent all of them, not just a few of them. For instance, community impact statement in the zoning appeals, they said, well, you don't have to have one. Well, guess what? You do. These things are important. They're not mere formalities. They are important. And, again, if you want to do development differently than it was when the other rules were passed, then let's look at that. And let's include everybody in the process about how can we do that. Because just right now, City Council's reputation is that you don't care about everybody. It's like you're going to make your little deals that you like, and that's it. So I'm sure that my 3 minutes are up, and I'm just going to sit.